Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at thomisticinstitute.org.
All right. Well, the title of this talk could have easily have been Water, Light, and Color for St. Thomas, although the notion of ontological status, I guess, is what sort of things, right? What kind of reality do these things have? To begin, there's a lot of background to issues of the nature of light, the nature of color, and they all primarily center, if we go back to ancient philosophy, on theories of vision. I was originally planning to have a little kind of outline of various ancient theories of vision, go into some details, but I was discovering that this was taking up too much time from actually getting to the real meat of the matter. So I'll just give a brief overview summary. We have two basic schools of thought when it comes to vision among ancient thinkers. We have the emission or extramission theory, which we find, for example, in Plato. Plato thought that the eye was made out of fire. Now, in the ancient world, there were thought to be four elements, as Professor Carl's mentioning the elements, right? The most basic constituents of things: earth, air, fire, and water. And so the thought is that there is fire in the eyes. Why? Well, in the dark, you see maybe the eyes of a cat gleam, right, or certain things along these lines. And so the thought of Plato was that fire sends light out from the eyes, and that somehow comes in contact with the objects. And so we make contact with the objects, and we, in a certain way, by this light emission or these sight rays, kind of feel the object. And so that is how the object comes to be known. But the light in our eyes is sometimes very weak, which is why it requires the light of the sun to strengthen it. And so the light of the sun is necessary for seeing because the light in our eyes is too weak, whereas other animals might have slightly stronger fire, and therefore they can see in the dark. They have night vision. The other theory we have is intromission theory, which intro, in this case, obviously indicates no, light doesn't come out of our eyes, it comes into our eyes, yeah? That we don't actively go out and see. Seeing is not an active power where we're kind of doing something to the environment or where we are projecting ourselves. Rather, sight is a receptive or passive activity whereby we receive the color and light from the environment. And this is the theory which Aristotle holds. Now, our focus here is on St. Thomas Aquinas, who adopts Aristotle's theory of vision and light and color, but develops these concepts beyond what Aristotle says. There's some certain basic points in Aristotle, but there's some ambiguity, and there came to be, in the tradition of Aristotelian commentators, disagreements on exactly how we should precisely understand Aristotle's theory. So a lot of what St. Thomas holds is influenced by later Aristotelian commentators, most notably the Arabic commentators Averroes and Avicenna. And Aquinas' theory is by no means original or revolutionary. It's a rather standard for the time. He falls in one particular camp. His theory was also influenced in large part by the work of his mentor, St. Albertus Magnus. So we're going to, in this talk, examine the nature and role of light in vision primarily. I know that Professor Peters is going to be talking about the sun as a universal cause, and so I'm going to, for the sake of time, not get into the way Aquinas thought that light was used, it was a means by which the sun could produce physical change and generate different substances. Rather, we're just going to focus on the role of light in vision. So Aristotle's main treatment of light is found in two places. One, in his De Anima, his treatise on the soul, where he talks about the powers of sensation. And then secondly, in his book on sensation, on the sensible things, De Sensu, where he talks about the nature of color. And as far as light is required to see color, right, he goes a little more into the nature of light there. So to understand the basic Aristotelian theory of light, we have to have a general idea as to how sensation works. So for Aristotle, sensation is a form of knowledge, and you know something when you possess in yourself the likeness of the thing. When I see Professor Carl over here, I have in my mind, right, I have in my awareness, right, what he actually looks like, right? The image, so to speak, right, in my awareness resembles the way he actually looks. So to So to know something is to become like it, to have that reality present in you, albeit in a different way than it's present in the thing. My eye does not literally become shaped, right, or colored exactly the way Dr. Carl is colored, right? So in order for this to occur, we have to have a sense power, which is a potential, which is a potential or a potency to have the form of the thing sensed. And when we say form of the thing sensed, we're going to mean the sensible qualities of something. One thing that Aristotle points out is that although I am seeing human beings in this room, nevertheless, I don't properly see human beings directly as human. Rather, what I am seeing with my eyes are the colored shapes of shaped, colored human beings. I don't directly see what a thing is with my eyes. I just see these properties of a thing. And if this weren't the case, then there would be no way you could be confused, for example, by the outline of a cardboard cutout, right? And the silhouette of a human being, right? Behind, for example, a frosted glass or something, right? Looks like a human shape, but it's actually a cardboard cutout or a statue, right? So we can't distinguish, right, between the essence or what a thing is merely based off of appearances. That requires a bit more investigation. Turning then to color and sight, St. Thomas says that the object of sight, which defines its activity, all powers are defined or identified by the activities they enable us to perform. The activity a sense power enables us to perform is perception or sensing, the knowing or possession of the appearances or properties of a thing that are sensible. And different activities of the same kind are distinguished by the objects involved. Yeah? So we would say that sensing in the case of sight is different from sensing in the case of hearing, because in the case of sight, we are sensing color versus sensing sound, et cetera, et cetera. So in De Anima, Book 2, Chapter 7, Aristotle gets into his theory of color. He says, color is properly what is visible because color is what appears to us in our power of sight. So it seems that because sight is a passive receptive capacity, that color is that which is able to move or alter or affect or actualize, yeah, this capacity. And he says that color is something which is visible, not by itself being visible as what it is, but rather something which has intrinsically in itself the power of altering our sense of sight. Now, in this way, he says, we must note that color, although it has the power to alter or to modify or to affect your power of seeing, it can't do it on its own. For if you turn out the lights in this room, although there will be colored bodies present, you won't see anything. Light, it seems, is necessary. So in this way, he continues by saying, so in order to see, we need light. But light is something that we find present in the air, that the air goes from, that when the air is dark, I can't see through it. I can't see the objects around me. When light is present in the air, then I can see objects around me. And he concludes then that insofar as the air is transparent when lit up, light is that property of the air that makes it to be transparent. Or to use the technical term, light is the actuality of a transparent body or see-throughable body insofar as it is see-throughable. Having said this, he then goes on to get into some other points. But at this point, I think we can turn to St. Thomas's exposition to kind of unpack this idea of light being the actuality of the transparent as transparent, or in the technical Greek, of the diaphanous, which just means see-throughable, basically. All right, so St. Thomas says that when Aristotle says color is visible, it's visible essentially, but in the second way in which you might say something is essentially visible. That is, color is not the essence of visibility. Color is not what it is to be visible. Rather, color has the ability or character or power to affect our eyes because of the sort of thing that it is. But insofar as bodies are colored, and they're colored because of the sorts of things that they are, right? Various elements, right, have certain characteristic colors. Those characteristic colors are due to the very substantial forms or natures of those bodies. So we can trace the ability of color to affect our eyes back to the nature of the body in question, although indirectly. So, with this said, then, let's look at the idea of light being the act of the transparent. So the transparent is transparent because, St. Thomas says, it lacks color. If I have a colored, opaque object, right, between me and you, I can't see through it, I can't see you, yeah? So insofar as something is lacking color, it's able to be seen through. Likewise, because it's lacking color, it seems that that color is able to be received into the air or the water or the glass. It's able to receive, and I'm going to speak in kind of vague way, you know, the color transmission, so to speak. We'll get at the end of this talk into exactly what that exactly is for St. Thomas, how the color is existing in the illuminated air. But it means that it can receive color from without, but it has no color of its own. And it can take on certain colors, right? The sky appears to us to be blue, but as I was flying here to DC, and I'm up in the sky, I look down, the sky, the air below me did not look blue anymore, yeah? So he notes that transparent bodies, or like water, right? It might look blue from one angle, right? But then you get up closer, and the water looks green, or gray, or brownish, if you're by the Mississippi where I live. So the color of a transparent body can change because the color is not something that it has in virtue of what it is, but rather it's something received from without. Thomas and Aristotle say in this case it's due to a sort of reflection. So this nature, this property of transparency is a generic property that's common to all see-throughable bodies. It's not that air is see-throughable because of its specific nature as air, or water is see-throughable because of something specific to it as water. Rather, there's a more common aspect of their natures that make them all equally see-throughable. So, with this said, St. Thomas then notes that light is said to be the act of the transparent as transparent. So what does this mean? Well, first we can say that light here is related to the transparent body in a way similar to the way that color is related to a opaque body, to a body of a determinate nature. And this is because, for St. Thomas, he thinks that color is something seeable or visible, and light is also something that we can see, although many times indirectly, right? It requires a solid object. So if you shine a flashlight beam, right, you know, into a dark room, you see the beam as far as it's encountering, right? Maybe some dust particles in the air. So it seems that the light is visible, but only indirectly. And insofar as the light in the medium is kind of visible, makes the air something you can kind of perceive with your eyes, it's like the color of the transparent medium, although properly without some other colored solid body, the transparent medium is invisible. You can't really pick it out, which is why, you know, you can walk into a glass door because you don't really see that it's there, which I almost did yesterday. So you guys gotta like frost some of those. With this, unpacking the idea that light is the act of the transparent as transparent, it might be helpful to see what light is not, or to see Aquinas refuting alternative theories. So the first theory that he criticizes, following Aristotle, is that of the ancient atomist Democritus, who held that light was a body. Now, Democritus thought that that all physical substances were ultimately reducible down, or really just composed of tiny little atoms, and not atoms in our contemporary sense, in terms of very small particles, right? That themselves are composed of protons, electrons, or neutrons. Rather, for him, atoms were indivisible, indestructible. They can never be generated or destroyed. Rather, just rearranged. Light, insofar as light is something real, he held, was one sort of particle. Now, Democritus' account of vision was that bodies around us are always continuously giving off these little films or effluences, these kind of one atom thick layers of their surface are constantly flowing off them. And that if those hit our eye, we see, but only if there are light particles accompanying or present along with those effluences or these little films. So he was definitely an intromission theorist, but he held that the colors of bodies, or that the appearances of bodies, are physical atomic structures that enter our eye, and what light does is somehow makes them to be bright. Yeah? Makes them registered to our eye. Now, St. Thomas says, given what Aristotle holds, that light is not a body, but it's the active state of a lit-up transparent medium, obviously that's incompatible with Democritus' theory. And there are several proofs given to show that Democritus' theory cannot be correct. First, St. Thomas notes, following Aristotle, that if light is truly present in a medium, and I'm going to be using the term medium throughout here to refer to any transparent body, glass, air, water, okay? So when light is present in the medium is actually lit up. It is bright, yeah? When the light is absent, the medium is dark. It seems light and dark are opposite properties. Well, if the entire air is light, it seems that light must be present in all the lit up parts of the air. But if light is a particle or a body, we have a problem. We would have to have two bodies, the light particle and the air particle, overlap for that air to actually be bright and lit up. But you cannot have two bodies coincide in the same place at the same time. Therefore, St. Thomas concludes light cannot be a body, but rather must be some property or modification, or to use our cheat sheet here, must be a quality of a transparent medium. A second proof comes from sense experience. It comes from just your everyday experience, which is if light was a body, it would seem that the act of illumination when the sun illuminates the air, when it rises in the morning over the horizon, would have to be a locomotion. How could light particles be present in all the parts of the air? They have to physically move there. But locomotion takes time. No locomotion, no change of place, St. Thomas holds, following Aristotle, can be instantaneous. And yet, to the senses, it appears the moment the sun pops up over the horizon, immediately, instantaneously, the entirety of the hemisphere, right? Edge to edge, the sky and all the objects around us, right, are illuminated and visible. And this seems to happen right away. And St. Thomas notes that maybe, right, maybe light could be traveling so fast that we just wouldn't detect its motion. But that would only seem to work over a very small distance, right? Something moves very quick over a very small distance, you don't notice it. But the whole sky, I mean, that's, you know, it's really, 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 really big, right? We would surely see if light was truly moving, it kind of loading across the sky, kind of like when you log onto like a computer, right, and it's booting up and there's the loading bar, right, kind of moving along. We would see the light loading across the sky each morning. But we don't. Yeah? We don't. Further, we also note that if we have a light source, say a candle or a light bulb, right, and we put a box over it, right, immediately all the light that's in the room suddenly disappears. But if light was a body, well, the light would still be somewhere, right? It would be hanging out, yeah, right? It wouldn't just immediately be destroyed, because if light is a body, the disappearance of light would not merely be the absorption of energy. No, it would be the corruption or destruction of a physical substance. It would be that light particle would have to be transformed into another sort of substance, just as when you break up water by electrolysis, right? The water doesn't just disappear, suddenly get hydrogen and oxygen, yeah? There's some residue that it has to be, that matter has to be turned into something else. But when it goes dark, what is this light turning into if it's a body? What kind of substance? The only thing that it seems like it could turn into would be darkness, yeah? Because the absence of light is followed by darkness. It doesn't seem like there's any appreciable increase in the mass of the air. But we don't want to say darkness is a kind of body, do we? No, that seems absurd. So based on these reasons, along with several others that St. Thomas gives in some of his earlier works, like if the sun is generating light, what's it generating it out of, right? It seems that at least for him, the heavenly bodies are incorruptible. They are unchanging and indestructible. So it doesn't seem like anything up in the heavens could be transformed into a light particle. And if God was to create new matter specifically that the sun could generate the form of light in, well, then that would be increasing the mass of the universe, which would violate the law of the conservation of matter, and it would make all illumination a divine action, taking away from the powers of an order of nature. So having noted this, St. Thomas gives an account as to why we might speak of light as a body that travels, and that's because we use a lot of motion talk when we talk about the properties and behavior of light. We say light rays pass through the air. We say light rays are reflected off of shiny surfaces, yeah? We say light rays intersect. These all seem to be bodily terms, yeah? We can visualize, right, light like a ball bouncing off the mirror, and so on and so forth. So Aquinas says, nevertheless, all this talk, given the arguments against light being a body, mean that such talk is merely metaphorical, not literal. Now, on the opposite end, we have another view that Thomas encounters, which says that light is something spiritual in the sense of supernatural, non-physical. Yeah? And I have personally, just as someone who works in philosophy, whenever anything that's kind of theologically related comes up, I think, why would anyone think that? But then I was talking with a friend, and he said, well, we do say, you know, I am the way, the truth, and the light, says Christ. Okay, and we have various ways we can talk about the divine light, yeah? And we also use a lot of light language, at least in Thomistic philosophy, to describe acts of understanding. We say, oh, I see what you mean, right? And Aristotle even describes the act of the intellect in abstracting as kind of an illumination of our, I see in the particulars something common that they all share, and I grasp the nature common to them by my mind illuminating or making visible that commonality present in them. So based off this, it was held by some that light primarily refers to some sort of spiritual reality, and that physical light is merely an imitation or a participation or some lower grade of being that should be modeled or explained in terms of this spiritual or theological reality. St. Thomas, though, is having none of that. He says visible light and whatever spiritual or intellectual light we might talk about differ in a very significant sense. I can sense physical light. I can't sense spiritual light. So they are fundamentally different in kind. Rather, all the terms that we use when describing the spiritual are metaphorical or analogous. And in fact, this is proper because we have a better understanding, right, about, although we'll see how well of an understanding we have when we're done here, of physical light than we do of any spiritual reality that we do not directly experience. So by going from what's better known or more familiar to us and describing the spiritual or supernatural in terms of what we do understand and saying that it is somehow analogous to these physical realities, we come to have, indirectly, a sort of grasp of what the divine nature is like or how intellection works or how angels, for example, pass knowledge on to each other. So for that reason, we should not say that the visible light is something spiritual or an imitation of a fundamentally spiritual reality. Rather, it's something very much physical and of this world. The last position we're going to get to, which will require a little unpacking, is that light is a substantial form of the sun. So for St. Thomas, since we don't have any artificial lights like light bulbs where we can, you know, run a current through and generate, yeah, glow, all bright objects, right, in his time are things that are either burning, right, or are the sun, yeah, or the other heavenly bodies. So the idea is that these things like fire, which is thought to be a substance, or the sun, which was thought to be a substance, are themselves just made of pure light. Light might be just what they are. Light is a form of matter, but it's only found in light sources. Or perhaps light is the substantial form. It's the act that makes the sun to be the kind of thing it is. It's the act that makes fire to be the kind of thing it is. And maybe the sun has more light. It has a higher substantial form. Fire here on Earth has a little bit less light. We find this theory, for example, being put forth in part by St. Bonaventure. But St. Thomas says that this cannot be the case for two reasons. When we talk about light, in this case, there is an important distinction. There are two words for light in Latin. Lux, L-U-X, which refers to the light of a light source. So when you look at the sun, you see this big ball of light. The light that belongs to the sun, that you see in the sun, we're going to call that lux, yeah? The light belonging to a light source. Versus lumen, which is the radiant light, or the light produced by light source in the air, which we see shining upon the walls all around us, which is reflected off of mirrors and whatnot. Yeah. So the thought was that light, lux, is the substantial form of the sun, and then that radiant light, that lumen, is a intentional or spiritual being. Now, what does this mean? I think the best way to kind of put it for now is that the light we see in the air is kind of a image or likeness, kind of a reflection of the actual light of the sun, but it's not actually a property belonging to the physical air itself. Kind of in the same way that you might say a rainbow kind of is seen in the air, yeah? But there's no physical rainbow there, right? You might say in that same way that the sun's image is present in the air, but there's nothing more to the air. There's no change in the air itself, but there's just a resemblance to the sun present there. St. Thomas says this cannot be the case for several reasons. First, we can see the light of the sun. But we can't, as we said earlier, see any substantial form. If I look at you, I see your color, I see your shape, but I can't actually see what you are. Otherwise, once again, I'd be able to distinguish between a statue of a human being and a real human being just by looking, yeah? So I can't see the nature of a thing. I can't know the nature of a thing by sight alone, but I can see the lux, or light, of the sun with my eyes. So it doesn't seem that lux can be the substantial form of the sun. Likewise, we also say that lumen, right, the emitted light of the sun, can't just be an imitation or some sort of spiritual resemblance to the sun itself. For the light that the sun gives off that's present in the air has physical effects. The light of the sun doesn't just illuminate things, it also heats. But in order to heat, it has to be something that is physically present in the air, whereby the air actually gets hot, such that when you walk outside on a bright, sunny day in summer, you feel heat in the air. So, since the light is both a cause of illumination, but also heating, it has physical effects, Aquinas says that light must be an actual physical property of the air. That is, it is something that actually exists in the air. The air actually has this as some way of existing. So he concludes then by saying, well, lux, or the light of the heavenly body, seems to be not its substance, not what it is, but rather a quality of itself. Now, St. Thomas, following Aristotle, recognizes four different types of qualities, or four different ways in which we might say a thing can be, or how a thing is. We will have things such as stable dispositions or habits, right? We will have things such as shapes. We will also have other tendencies or states, such as being healthy or being sick. But he says that light, along with the other colors and the other sensibles, like heat and smell and sound, belongs to the third category of quality. That is, qualities of a thing that are active, which can produce in us an awareness, by which the thing is able to act on and to alter in one way or another a subject, which we would call in this case the patient. So the patient is altered by the agent, by means of the agent's qualities or powers. So light then is an active quality of the sun, whereby it can illuminate and heat. And lux in this case differs from heat. It is not heat itself. This can maybe be something for the Q&A, but rather is a higher form of a active quality that can produce multiple effects in bodies, including both illumination and heating. Lumen, which is the light present in the air, is of the same nature as, it's the same sort of quality as light in the sun, except it inheres in the air in a different way. It's a dependent entity. It is something that is present as an active quality of the lit up air or the lit up water or the lit up glass, but it's something that exists because the sun is constantly giving or supplying that quality to that medium. St. Thomas notes that unlike other qualities, though, like heat or cold, light seems to have no opposite, no contrary state. So if we think about hot and cold, we might think of cold merely as the privation of heat, but if we think about other properties, such as solid or liquid, yeah? Solid and liquid are two positive states, two definite ways that a body can exist. And if you want to transition something from solid to liquid, you're going to have to alter it, and it's going to take some time, right? It's going to take some time because there's a certain resistance to the heating and the liquefying of, say, for example, an ice cube. Light, on the other hand, it only has one opposite, which is darkness. But darkness, St. Thomas says, is simply the absence or lack of light. It's not a positive or determinate way of existing. It's rather just a privative way of existing. Insofar as there's no positive way of existing there, there's no resistance to illumination. So when the light comes on, the air doesn't have to be altered in order to be able to receive the light. It doesn't have to be given a disposition or kind of nudged to the state where it's able to suddenly transform to bright, just as when you, unlike in the case where you have to heat the ice in order for it to finally melt and turn into water. Yeah. Rather, it's something that happens instantaneously, which is why illumination would occur instantaneously. Now, he proceeds to note then that we need to understand further the nature of the transparent, because if light is a quality, well, then it will be properly defined by the thing which it's a quality of. Now, we have two types of light: the light of a bright body, which belongs to the body in virtue of the sort of thing that it is, in virtue of its nature or form, and the light of an illuminated medium, which belongs to it in virtue of the sun illuminating it. And St. Thomas says that insofar as these types of light are the same kind of quality, but they just exist in the two subjects for different reasons. The sun has lux because of what it is, the air has light because it's given it by the sun, that the capacity for having light is a common capacity shared by the sun and the air. This is the property of transparency. The difference is that, he holds, the sun is transparent in a way such that it can be completely full of light, so full of light that light is visible of itself. Whereas air and water are transparent, but don't have the same amount of capacity for light. They can't have the same quantity of this quality, we might say, or the same intensity, yeah, of this quality. Which is why, although they can be lit up, they don't actually shine, right, or glow in and of themselves. And actually, he adds that even physical bodies, opaque bodies, have some transparency, but only on their surface, insofar as the surface is able to be illuminated. And I can see different levels or gradations of brightness here. That means that, for St. Thomas, the surface admits of or can receive light in some way. So, with this stated, let's get into why light is necessary for sight, and exactly how sight then occurs. So, light's necessary for sight in one of two ways. Yeah? Either the light makes the medium lit up and illuminates the object and makes the colors in the object present and visible. That is an object that's colored actually colored in the dark? One theory from Avicenna said no, that light actually kind of activates the body's potency or capacity to be colored and makes the body actually colored such that that active state of color can then affect our eyes. The other view, the view of Verwey, says, no, colors exist in the dark. Colors are able to, in and of themselves, affect the sight, but only when there's a lit-up medium through which their activity can be transmitted, so to speak. St. Thomas goes with Averroes. Later in his life, although early in his career, he seems to agree more with Avicenna. I'm not going to get too much into that distinction, other than just to note that St. Thomas says in this way that light and color are distinct entities. They're distinct qualities. Color is a quality of a colored body. Light is a quality of an illuminated, transparent body. Although, in a certain way, as far as both light, when you look at the light bulb or the sun, and color are both things that can affect our eyes, can bring about sight, they seem to belong to a common genus. Seem to be of a more general common kind called visible. And so there must be something in a way common to these. And for this reason, he says, we might say in a way that light is like the color of a transparent body. Of a transparent body that's fully full of light, like the sun, that's the visible property of it, yeah? I see the sun, its color is its light. In a physical body that's not transparent, the color is what I see, and that is akin to light in some way. St. Thomas then adds that, colors are then seen insofar as when the medium is made transparent, the colors are able to affect the medium. The medium, by being colorless, can somehow receive the colors of objects into it. And by receiving the colors of objects into it, those colors can then be transmitted to our eyes. And the importance of the medium can be seen in two ways. One, once again, to go to Professor Carl. Professor Carl is not sitting right next to me. He's not touching me. So how can his color affect my eyes way over here? There has to be some way it can connect. There has to be some medium that mediates whereby there's an actual continuity between the object seen and the sense power such that its activity or its transmission can actually reach me. If there were no air here, if there was just a pure vacuum, St. Thomas says, there'd be no way for the color to actually affect me because insofar as a void is non-being, there would be nothing that could take on or receive into itself the color. The color would not be able to transmit itself through the void, for there would be nothing there to receive it. For colors, unlike in Democritus' theory, where we have these physical little atom, you know, these physical little one-atom thick kind of, you know, sheets coming off and entering our eye, color's not a body, but a quality. Now, the way that the other reason why a medium is necessary, an illuminated one, is that it seems that color is not able to transmit itself all on its own. If you put a colored object directly on your eye, you don't see anything. Yeah? So St. Thomas says that in this case, it seems that color is not strong enough, unlike the light of the sun, to activate or to transmit itself to your eye, because the color in itself can't actualize the medium, the transparent, receivable, colorless medium on its own. Now, having noted this, let's turn now to the ontological status of color. Yeah? So we've said light is a physical quality. That is to say, it's an actual property of the sun, or an actual property in the air, or in the water, or in the glass, or whichever thing is illuminated, that the thing actually comes to exist in a certain way because it has gained this actuality. What about color? Well, color, as we've just seen for St. Thomas, is not the same as light. Yeah? Color is an actual quality in hearing in bodies, and it is present even when the lights are out. Although St. Thomas says that the insides of bodies aren't actually colored, but only potentially colored. There's really no color there. There's no ability to affect anything outside of the body until you, for example, cut something open. So if you crack a geode, then the colors are revealed, but they have no influence. The body as a whole is not affecting your eye, just the surface. Now, in this way, light seems to be necessary in order to be able to make the colors shine. But how do the colors get to our eyes? And this is the last point we're going to cover, and this is maybe the trickiest. And I'm still kind of unsatisfied in certain ways with my own understanding. So St. Thomas says that the light, or rather the illuminated medium, receives the color without itself becoming colored. That the medium receives the color of the object without becoming colored. That is to say, if there's a blue wall behind me, the air that receives that color does not suddenly turn color such that the air is now itself tinted blue. It does not take on a blue hue intrinsically the way that the blue wall has it. Rather, the color is in the air as far as I see the color in the object through the air, so it somehow has to be transmitted to me. But the air doesn't change physical colors as if the air was now a tinted glass or something along those lines. And expressing this, St. Thomas uses Aristotle's analogy of this notion of receiving a form without the matter. So Aristotle says that when a sensible quality is received into a medium, it's received in the same way as wax receives the shape of a seal or signet ring when you impress that ring onto the wax. The wax doesn't take on any of the material properties of the iron or bronze ring. The matter is not transformed into a different sort of matter. Rather, it's just that shape existing in the wax without any other properties of the ring. And this is not a perfect image, but it gets us some of the way there. So in the same way that the wax can take on the shape without turning into the sort of thing that can have and retain that shape. No, wax can take on multiple shapes, right? You can kind of, you know, reform it and press it, whereas you can't really ball up a ring, right, and kind of, you know, reshape it yourself. So it has it in virtue of a different material disposition. In the same way, the air takes on, or the illuminated air, takes on the colors of things. And this is said to be taken on in a immaterial or spiritual way, insofar as this quality of the colored body is taken on without any change to the material disposition or composition of the air. Now, what is true of the air is also true of our sense organ. The reason why we can see is because St. Thomas says we have an eye which is itself transparent. The pupil is transparent. The inside of the eye, he says, is transparent. Aristotle says, and it's got to be made of water. Water is see-throughable, right? And so on his four-element theory, it's primarily water in our eye. That's why light and the color then can be transmitted and received in this immaterial, spiritual, or intentional way. And St. Thomas's notion of intentionality, I think here, is important. For intentionality involves the idea of a tendency towards or an aboutness. That is, the color which is received in us is a informing, it's informational. In some way, the information about the color of the thing is present in the air and in our eye. In that way, we can see that the shape in the wax from the ring is informational. It's not the same shape as the ring itself, right? It's a negative. It's kind of like a photo negative, right? Where the ring sticks out, the wax is indented. Where the ring does not stick out, the wax sticks out. So there's a one-to-one correspondence between a feature of the wax and a feature of the ring. And we can use that wax, maybe not the wax, but we could use, for example, clay, right? If we had then hardened it, to cast rings, yeah? To make new rings that have the exact same shape. The clay at no point is a ring, but it has in itself information such that it can be used to reproduce another copy. It can make that thing to become present in another subject. Now, exactly how light is present in this spiritual intentional way in the air, St. Thomas does not give us much more on. I will note, it seems though, there is a difference in this way. For us to sense, we must have the likeness of the thing in an immaterial or spiritual way. Merely your hand becoming physically hot is not the same as sensing heat. Otherwise, any body that was heated, a rock that is heated, would perceive heat. It's not merely by receiving the form of an agent without receiving the actual matter making up the agent. We have to have that form in a different way than it exists in the agent. Now, in us, St. Thomas says this will involve a certain spiritual immutation, something over and above any physical change that occurs to our body. But the air is not a sensitive, conscious entity. Therefore, it does not seem like there can be anything spiritual, right, or anything psychic or psychological about the existence of the color in the air. So the color must be in the air in a quasi-physical way, but just not in the same way as it is in the colored body. What this state is, St. Thomas does not say. But I do think that this is room for possible application of Thomistic theory and an openness to many of the developments in contemporary science in the understanding of light as a wave or a particle or a particular wave, that light is colored in some way. And there's not a one-to-one correspondence with St. Thomas, but there are many points of contact. The one note I will leave you with is, if Aquinas' analysis here, even though a lot of his scientific view of the world, his cosmology, geocentrism, the sun is incorruptible, might be outdated and incorrect. I think there's something here about the idea of light being a quality, and that color is somehow present in a non-physical or a different way than it is in a body. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.